Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome back to Head Games Radio. This is Nick Lowry, formerly of the Kansas City Chiefs, so I am a little biased in my questions. I'm sure will reflect that bias, but let's go back to this quote, Herman, from Phil Simms about fathers and sons in sports.
Well, I think it's interesting. There's so many reasons why I think we see a lot in baseball, too, Nick, where sons are following the fathers. The atmosphere they grow up in, of course, has a lot to do with what we're going to do in life. And my sons, they grew up in a sports atmosphere. I couldn't raise them in an atmosphere like a doctor. I didn't have that time, and it's not in me, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not smart enough to be a doctor. So, and of course, genetics always has something to do with it. You hope, well, you don't hope. Sometimes they get passed down, sometimes they don't. And throwing is every bit as a genetic athletic trait that's passed along as being a fast runner, being 7 foot tall, whatever. So for quarterbacks, when you can throw, a lot of times we're fortunate that gets passed down the line to the next generation. And if I could do it over again, I would probably do it differently. Well, I know I would do it differently. I would be a little more involved. And more involved, I mean, guide my oldest son more, who's at Tampa Bay now, and tell him more about being a player, about what's going to go on at the next level, and help him with some of those decisions. I was always trying to stay out of it. I stayed back, and I let my son handle too much of it. And think about it, Nick. Here's my son who had a lot of notoriety coming out of high school, could go to any school in the country. And my take on it was, I'm going to let him make that decision. Now that I can go back and think it over again, this is a 17-year-old boy. Now, what the heck were you thinking of when you were 17, Nick? And there's a lot of thoughts going on.
That was Phil Simms. Does that remind you, does that make you think about the kind of influence your father chose to have with you, Herman?
Yeah, and then I turned around and had to do basically what Phil talks about with my son, Marcus. And he was a highly recruited athlete coming out of Florida, out of Tampa. He chose one school and transferred and is now at San Diego State. He's going to graduate and play football, and he's a senior this year. But I thought the thing that we talked about is I didn't try to tell him what school to go to. I wanted him to weigh his options and to make sure the reason he was going there wasn't because of a coach. I wanted to make sure of that, because you never know what's going to happen with coaches. You know, they move around so much, you know, and it wasn't because it was comfortable. It was where he felt he could fit in as a student athlete and have fun. And if he played a lot of football, that was great. But the whole key was to get an education and to graduate. And when we left Florida, he was at South Florida, and then after his second year, he decided to transfer to San Diego State, where I ended up going to, where I transferred to when I was from Cal Berkeley. So he's in San Diego, is going to graduate. Wasn't a starter, but played a lot for him, played receiver. But I was in, you know, I was like Phil, you know, I didn't coach him a whole lot, but the decision-making process, I was probably a little bit more involved in it than Phil was.
What do you think about the kind of influence of a Kellen Winslow in saying, if it's possible, I want you to be with an African-American head coach? We've got a real obligation to try to encourage and display the leadership ability, the character, and the class and caliber of African-American leaders in this country.
Well, I think, that's great to say, but sometimes that's very, very difficult to do when you talk about college football and even pro football, and the fact that sometimes that's not always a wise decision. You want to put your son and I think or young athlete, whether it be a female or a male, in a situation, in an environment where they have a coach that cares about them more than just an athlete, and I think that's very, very important. And I think most coaches now in today's world understand that these kids are under your tutelage for 4 to 5 years, and you have an obligation, not only to that player, but to the parents, to make sure that you're doing everything in this child's best interest to make him a better person, and to make sure they're going to school and making sure they're getting an education, because the athletics will take care of itself. And I think you have to build on that foundation. I think if you do that, I understood that when I was at San Jose State recruiting kids. from the L.A. area, bringing them to San Jose. And the one thing I told their parents is, I'm going to make sure they go to school. I said, I don't know how much they're going to play, but I can guarantee you this. I'm going to make sure they go to school, and I'm going to make sure they get an education and have a degree when they leave up out of here.
Let's talk about Dick Vermeil and his influence. He talks about how his father was so demanding of him, he built this great work ethic in him as a mechanic.
Right.
And by the age of 15, 16, 17, he was really about as experienced as most people 10 years older than him. But nothing was ever good enough. As you look at Dick now, as you look at the influence he has, he is thought of as someone who truly cares. And that makes such a difference. I look at it that the leader in the head coaching ranks, A, makes sure the players understand he truly cares, and B, he understands them. He understands each unique quality, the particular buttons that he has to push. Tell us what you learned from Dick Vermeil while you were playing and since then.
Well, you make some good scenario. You bring up some good points about Dick and the fact that he did care about his players, and you know he felt obligated to you, but you had to meet a certain standard too for him to know that it was hard. He was very demanding, but he wanted everyone to understand there was a certain standard that you were going to have to play to, and what you were going to have to bring to work every day. And if you didn't meet that standard, you weren't going to be around. And I think that the players really bought into that. I know in Philadelphia. But he cared about players. He cared about your family. He cared about you more than just being a football player. And I think that's why the guys, even today, are very, very loyal to Dick Vermeil. I mean, I've known Dick Vermeil. I was fortunate. He recruited me when I was 17 years old, tried to go to UCLA, and ended up going to Cal. And then I signed my first contract in Philadelphia with Dick and Carl Peterson. So I'm kind of in a unique situation where you actually played for a man in your pro career, and now all of a sudden he steps down to retire and you're taking his job as a head coach. So I don't think that's happened in the NFL.
It's got to be an emotionally rewarding thing, but also daunting. Let's talk about, I'm going to share this quote from your good friend Tony Dungy about what it meant for him to have you help turn around things in Tampa Bay.
You had Herman there. He'd been a scout with the Chiefs, a man of great character. What did you see in Herman Edwards that made you want to bring him, not only bring him down to Tampa Bay in your first job as a head coach in the NFL, but also make him assistant head coach?
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about before the break and developing your team, developing the attitude and the atmosphere that you want to have. I had known Herman a long time. We played some college all-star games together as seniors in college. We'd worked at Kansas City, and we'd been friends for a long time. His attitude and his beliefs about how you play the game were just very similar to mine. So we're going to Tampa in 1996. Tampa's in a losing atmosphere, 13 years in a row, no winning seasons, and I knew it was going to be tough changing that around. And I needed someone who thought like I did, and that's why Herm was just invaluable. And we went there, and he was a big part of creating an environment where you did learn to play the game the right way. You respected your teammates. The team became the most important thing, and those are the things I think Herm is going to bring to the Chiefs.
So what do you think? Is that about right? As you look at the creating this culture, what's the first thing you start with?
Well, obviously, the mindset and the attitude. And I think attitude, and I always tell people this, the two things you do control in your life, I think most people think you control everything in your life and you really don't. The two things you can't control is your attitude and time. Because your attitude can be your best friend or your worst enemy. And time, everyone gets a lot of the same time every day, whether you're rich, poor, doesn't matter what religion you believe in, those two things you can control. And so with that being said, that was the mindset, obviously, when we went to Tampa. That is my mindset all of a sudden when I went to New York. Will be my mindset here in Kansas City. Now, I was very fortunate. In New York, I inherited a pretty good football team, not like the one we inherited in Tampa. Here, I'm inheriting a pretty good football team, and the fact that they've won a lot of games, but they've fallen a little bit short as far as playoff appearances. And I think that's the mindset now. And it is not about the numbers that you can produce. As a football team and the points you can score, it's about playing together as a team to make sure that we're not sitting at home next year talking about, well, we had a pretty good year and we almost made the playoffs again. Well, that's not good enough. That's underachieving as far as I'm concerned. So we're a team that I think has a great chance of getting in the playoff competition and getting in the tournament, but it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to take a lot of guys willing to sacrifice how we play football. Now, we might play a little different. And that's okay, because it's about the team. It's never about individual stats.
Herman, let's talk, before we get into more detail about Kansas City, let's talk about what you learned from New York. Certainly, we just got about 2 minutes in this segment, and we really appreciate it. We've been so blessed to have you and Tony and other head coaches come on for the show at this length to get into some detail. I'm sure, I'll say this, that when you talk to the media and you know that whatever you said for 3 minutes is going to be condensed down to 5 seconds, we're going to give you a chance now to talk in detail. We're not going to cut you short here. Right. What is the most important thing you learned in terms of the relationship of the players to focus and not letting the media dictate how you coach the team?
Well, I think the thing you have to understand is you have to make sure your players understand there's perception and reality. And the perception is always out there. And I think I always created what I told them, here's the perception, but I'm going to give you reality. And you know, the greatest thing about coaching up there, and there's a lot of great things, but I think the thing you learn right away is that you have to have the attention of your team and the trust of your team, and to make sure that they don't get distracted by the distractors. And I think that's the thing that you always guard against, and that's the thing that you understand when you coach in New York, that you always have to let them know exactly where we're going. You got a game plan, you got a roadmap, and let them know this is where we're at. Regardless of what anybody else says, we have to stay focused on that. And I think you as the leader have to make sure they see that in you. And if you show them that every day, that this is where we're going, they'll follow you.
Well, Herman, we're not going to keep dwelling on this, but let me just ask you one last question about New York. Is it then that reason that you really choose not to talk a lot about what happened in New York?
No, I just think that, you know, it's my situation is this, and I think it's with any team. I had a great run there. They gave me my first opportunity to be a head coach, and I think what happened there needs to stay there. The powers to be know what happened, and that's all that matters.
Well, we're going to go to a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Herman Edwards' leadership as a coach, as a man, how you build trust and loyalty that lasts. We'll be right back.